Welcome to your new Hollywood. You get it? Got it? Good.
Hello, everyone. Hey, Gabrielle.
Howdy do.
How's it going?
It's going good, finally. I think you and I both have been through, like, weirdness.
I've been in a constant state of fever for the last week.
You poor thing. I think this is something that's literally going around the country. You know?
It's yeah, not a I think
cold.
It is.
Maybe it is a strain of a cold. But it I also think it's like an allergy thing.
It's something bad. It's something bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's something bad.
Yeah. So you had a major fever.
Yeah, major fever. But I am here and I'm feeling really great.
Good. Congrats.
We are excited about today's episode. We're on episode 28.
Yes, episode 28. And once again, we have another guest for you guys. It is Stephanie Palmer, who is the author of the book Good in a Room, which basically taps into how to give that excellent pitch for your concept, no matter what it is, screenplay, television show. Stephanie actually is a former studio executive. She was the director of creative affairs at MGM. I love this book. I read this book. I passed it along to you, Key, because I was like, you've got to read this book.
Uh-huh.
And she's here.
And you did not steer me wrong. That's all I can say.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad. But, you know, I get a lot of emails from friends and questions over the phone from friends about, I'm going in for this pitch. Can you, you know, give me some advice, or can you listen to it, or, you know, things like that. And although I've sat on the other side of the table and heard many pitches, I feel like this book really sums it up and can help anybody sort of pull their act together. But, you know, the top of that would be actually going to Stephanie for coaching, which, you know, I would highly recommend.
Yeah, I definitely. I've been thinking about it myself.
Yeah, totally. So, yes, we have Stephanie on the show, so we're very excited about that. So please stay tuned, guys. I think you're in for a treat, and you're going to walk away having learned
mucho information.
Mucho?
Yeah. I said that way so that when I go back into editing, hopefully I can echo it and make it sound, like, bigger than what it is.
Oh, wow.
Mucho.
This is crazy. Okay. And as always, folks, before we dive in with Stephanie, we're going to hit on a little no-biz like showbiz. There's a lot of news that has been flying around. I'm not going to say nothing major because there's major news going on all over the place.
It's major to someone.
It's major to somebody. You know, call me crazy. But I guess, you know, in no particular order, Ryan Seacrest has made some major deal, business deal, where he's going to be working with the Today Show. And I don't know how many millions they've offered this guy, but he's just, like, taking over. He's taking over.
Yeah, and with the passing of Dick Clark, yeah. You know, yeah. Who I think was his great mentor, I think that he's definitely, he's going to have some great stuff lined up for him.
Well, he hasn't gone wrong so far. I mean, a lot of the shows that he's developed for E! Have taken off.
The funny thing is, do you remember the very first American Idol season?
Oh.
With him and the other guy?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, why do people pick on that other guy? He wasn't all that bad.
No, but they really didn't need to host.
No, they didn't. But I don't think they knew that then. You know, you try everything.
Yeah. But it's so weird when you look at it now. Like, if you told someone who never ever, because, you know, there are kids that are watching it today that weren't, you know, even watching TV then. That there used to be two hosts, I think they would have a hard time without some footage to back it up, believing.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. And he actually has a new show that he's announced that he has developed with Kevin Jonas. It's called Married to Jonas, and this is a reality show that's going to document his life to his wife, Danielle, whom he married a couple of years ago. Yeah. My question is, who wants to watch all of that? Whatever. What do I know? What do I know? Seriously, what do I know?
Oh, gosh.
I'm awful. I'm horrible, aren't I? We were also talking about television pilots a few weeks ago, and I know one of them was 666 Park Avenue. It's the one that's being produced by Alloy Entertainment, and I believe it's based on a YA novel. by Gabriella Pierce. It's the one about a couple that takes, I think they take an apartment in some sort of highfalutin building in New York City, and all kinds of spooky things are happening there.
Uh-huh.
So they finished shooting that, and it's in post-production. And I think that anybody, if you're a fan of any of Alloy Entertainment shows like Gossip Girl and The Vampire Diaries, et cetera, if you go to Alloy Entertainment's website, which is alloyentertainment.com, and subscribe, you can get onto their, I think it's their community page or something, where they have the executives basically blog about things that are going on in terms of production for them. And I think it's pretty cool that they reach out to fans that way.
Yeah, that is really
that's
cool.
Just me. I just think it's kind of cool. And, you know, one of them was talking about, actually it was the head of the television division who was talking about how things are going with 666 Park Avenue. And I found it very informative. So, you know, there you
go. I love the name.
666 Park Avenue?
Yep.
I don't feel comfortable saying 666.
I noticed because you keep having to add the Park Avenue.
Is that what it is?
I think so. I also wanted to shout out Kristen Ritter. She stars in Don't Trust a Bee in Apartment 23. She is one of Marjorie Ballantyne's students.
That's right.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. You're right. And you
know
what?
Her show premiered, and we kind of wanted to give a little shout out to Kristen and to Marjorie. And I actually have a DVR'd because, again, I was sick with fever, but I will be watching.
Can I tell you what? That show is hysterical.
Is it? Oh, I can't wait to watch.
Oh, my gosh. That show is so freaking funny. I mean, the girl that plays the bee, she's nuts.
Is that Drema Walker?
No, it's, wait a minute. Which one is Kristen?
Kristen is a brunette.
Yeah, she plays the bee.
Oh, okay.
She is Banoodles.
That's fun. Yeah, well, that's great.
The last
yay,
episode
Marjorie. Yay, Kristen.
Well done, Kristen. And good for you, Marjorie. You know, that woman surrounds herself with such talented people. And also, Kristen has another development deal with another network as well. So, you know, that girl's like, she's got things in the works, as you said, Kia, in the works.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Well, moving on with the show, people. We hope you stay tuned because we are about to get in a great discussion on pitching with Stephanie Palmer. Welcome back to the show, people. As we mentioned, we do have a guest today, and it is someone who I am so happy she agreed to do the show, and it is Stephanie Palmer. Stephanie Palmer is a former director of creative affairs at MGM, where she supervised acquisitions and development and production of a number of films, some of which I'm sure you've heard of. Legally Blonde, my mother loves that film, by the way, Stephanie, just so you know. Every time it's on TNT or something, she's like, Legally Blonde is on. I'm like, I know. Be Cool. You did The Brothers Grimm, which I finally saw on demand a few months ago, and Agent Cody Banks. Stephanie then left the company, and in 2005, she founded the company called Good in a Room, and she authored a book of the same title that came through Random House in 2008. She's been featured on NBC, The Early Show, CBS, and my favorite show on KCRW, The Business, which is how I heard about you, Stephanie. Thank you. Thank you so very much for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Why don't we kick it off just by finding out, how did you get into the business?
Well, I studied theater at Carnegie Mellon, and I was planning to be a theater director. I'm planning to head right out of school and go to New York and be a theater director. But my professor, my advisor, had said, Stephanie, I think you should at least consider Los Angeles, and I think that you should consider film. And at that time, I was really sort of snob. I was like a theater snob. I was like, no, I'm doing theater. I'm doing theater, not film. And I'd never been to Los Angeles. And so I had the East Coast snobbery of like, oh, those people are foolish and vapid, and I wouldn't, you know, I'm doing art. but I at least over my mind, and I so appreciate my advisor's advice. And he said, well, just go out and do an internship before you at least make this decision. And so I was very lucky, and then I did an internship over my winter break on the movie Titanic.
Oh, no way.
So
I, yes. So I was very lucky. It wasn't actually, I can't say it was by great design. It was just the producer who I had gotten an internship with the day that I arrived was put on the movie Titanic, and it was already in production. If you recall, it was, things were spiraling out of control.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The producer was one of the people brought on to get the budget under control.
Wow.
So I had this amazing opportunity to be working in the office in Los Angeles, but also traveling down to the set when they were shooting in Encinita, Mexico, to really get to see Titanic. And, of course, I was totally swept into the world of film and movie making, and also realized that there were really interesting, talented, hardworking, creative people who cared about the work that they were doing. And so
that's right, you young whippersnapper.
Exactly. So I realized, oh, this is really a place where I could really see myself aspiring to work in the movie business. And so right out of graduation, after graduation, I got a job working for Jerry Bruckheimer. And so I was working in development and learned the business from the inside and was grateful for that opportunity. From there, I moved to MGM, where I was also an assistant, and then moved up to being a story editor and then finally the director of creative affairs. And it was in that role where I was started hearing thousands and thousands of pitches. And also, it was my job to be one of the executives to help find and acquire projects. So reading thousands of screenplays, meeting with writers, directors, producers, and finding projects that we wanted to make into movies.
Okay, so you answered my next question, was just exactly what does this studio executive do? You
know. Okay, well, and it was a little different at the time where the development executive also worked, if you found the project and you developed it, which was the development process, is working with the writer to make the screenplay as good as it possibly can be, then we also supervised production.
Mm-hmm.
So we then got to follow the movie through to finding who was going to direct it, casting, who were the main casting choices, hiring the main crew, obviously with the director and the producers' inputs. I mean, they are leading the charge, where
mm-hmm.
the studio executive is more like the bank,
mm-hmm.
the representative of the bank, who's making sure that their money is being spent in as smart a way as possible and wanting to make as smart a choice as they can.
Mm-hmm. That sounds stressful.
It was. It's an extremely stressful but really thrilling
mm-hmm.
job. I mean, you work extremely long hours. It's very competitive. There are lots of people who want those jobs. There are very few of those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fantastic, especially when I was young and single. And that was my entire life. And for a lot of people, that's what they want to do for always. But
mm-hmm.
for me, I knew that I wanted to have a different kind of life. I couldn't sustain doing that level of work and insane hours for more than the, 11 years
mm-hmm.
that I was doing that.
Yeah.
And, Stephanie, how different was that process at MGM from the way that the other movie houses kind of did things at that time?
A lot of things were the same in that the development executives, you're still, the main job is finding projects. So that's evaluating screenplays that are being submitted primarily from agents or managers or producers, finding those great things, but then also being proactive to finding projects like magazine articles or life story rights or remake possibilities or things, other projects that were out there that other people may not have seen that you thought would make a good movie. For a lot of studios, the development executives, they find the project, get the script as good as it possibly can be, and then they pass it off to the production department, and the production executives then take over those projects
mm.
and supervise the actual making of the movie.
And how did Legally Blonde come your way? Can you tell
us? Well, I can't take credit for finding it,
mm-hmm.
but it was an unpublished manuscript for a book that the author had written and submitted it to publishers and had gotten totally rejected. And the executive, one of my colleagues, had read it and thought, this is a really great idea for a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it's a great example of, and then we hired the writer and hired the writing team and developed the screenplay and got the movie made, which was really, I mean, it was a huge thing for everyone there because the movie ended up being so successful and it mm-hmm. was very inexpensive to make. And it also was, even though Reese Witherspoon is this huge star now, at that point she'd really only been in like Election, I think.
Yeah, that was like the biggest film, I believe. That
and so people were starting to know who she was. They had great admiration for her, but she wasn't the huge movie star that she is now.
Well, I believe it was my mother. Someone said, "Oh, looks like she wised up when they had the second one come out. She's producing it now."
Oh yeah, and absolutely producing and making a fine, a significant raise.
Yeah. Yeah, a good raise for her. Well-deserved, yes. Well-deserved raise.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You were lucky enough to also work in the story department there.
I was.
That's a busy place.
It is. Former boss, Michael Nathanson, who is the president of the studio, referred to the story department as the engine room that runs the studio,
mm-hmm.
because there aren't movies to make if you don't have these projects and you don't have these ideas. So that was a job that I absolutely loved, where I was in charge of all the submissions, and MGM got more than 4,000 screenplays submitted each year.
Ugh.
And those are all represented by agents, primarily at the major agencies, so you know there's thousands and thousands and thousands mm-hmm. more screenplays written each year. Actually, there's more than 60,000 screenplays that are that are registered at the Writers Guild mm-hmm. each year. And so you think how many more scripts are out there that don't even take that step.
Oh God, I don't even want to think about it.
Hundreds of thousands per year. You know, I mean, there just are thousands and thousands of people who have an idea for a screenplay that they want to see made.
Mm-hmm. But for someone who really is interested in development, that is a prime spot.
There is no better job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is absolutely no better job because you are on the front lines of seeing these thousands of screenplays, what is basically out there being submitted to all the major studios and helping determine why we're going to read this one first and this one is going to be on the lower end or, you know, on this long stack that maybe you'll get to when you have a chance. You're mm-hmm. prioritizing and also deciding and making sure that all the screenplays that are submitted are covered by readers, professional script readers,
mm-hmm.
and that the things that are worthy of paying attention to, that you're handling that in a really quick way, because a lot of times the best scripts get snapped up really quickly and there can be a bidding war, so you need to make sure that you're right on top of the high priority projects. And that was a part that I really loved about the job, was just the competitiveness of, are we going to get this? Is Disney going to buy it? Is Universal going to buy it? Sony?
Yeah.
How can we get it? And getting in there, I mean, that's something that I love.
But like the studio executives, you too probably had to, you know, establish relationships with producers and writers and take meetings and things. Am I correct? Or?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I would say people think that studio executives, that your job is just sitting in a chair waiting for the phone to ring and that people are constantly pitching you. And that is a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But to be successful, executive is constantly pitching themselves and the studio to better and bigger projects.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted the best producers to send their project to me, because if they sent it to me instead of one of my colleagues, then I would get to work with them and supervise this great film.
Mm-hmm.
Or
right.
send it to me versus my counterpart who was doing my same job at Universal.
You get a lot of scripts sent to you, and I'm sure that the studio executives don't see everything. So it's your job to pass on things. Isn't there that fear that you might pass on, like, the project that you thought was going to be a dud and then explodes at a different studio, and then they look to you and say, well, didn't you see this script? Or...
Yes. Every studio executive, I will tell you, and I'll be the first to admit it, every studio executive has passed on projects that have gone on to be huge hits for other studios. And that is totally true for me, too.
Okay.
And that has to be true. Yeah.
It is true. It is true. And I remember Dodgeball.
Oh, God.
Dodgeball coming in, which I loved, but I couldn't get my bosses to buy it. And it was made into a huge hit movie.
Who knew?
I mean, there was plenty. Anchorman. I remember when Anchorman came in.
Wow.
On it. Huge movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, every studio, though, would say the same thing, and there would be things that, I mean, there would be total examples that it works in the reverse also. You know, you want the project to have the right fit with the right studio, the right executives who really understand it and can market it, the right marketing team that's going to understand how to reach that particular audience. There is an element of sort of alchemy or chemistry that all has to come together when a movie really is great and finds its audience. It's really hard to make a great movie.
Well, I'm thinking,
that's why there's so many stinky ones.
This is true. I mean, I'm not that familiar with the MGM brand, but from what I know as a young person, if Anchorman and Titanic were presented to you, you'd go for Titanic first.
Sure. Okay. But we were making the studio film, and our partner, which was under the MGM label, was United Artists that would make independent movies.
Okay.
So if it was an independent, I mean, and there were so many amazing independent movies that would come into me, and I would say, gosh, I would love to work on this, but this is not, the smallest amount of budget that we could really make a movie for at that time was $14 million.
Right.
So if it was under $14 million but still a great movie, then I would call my friend at United Artists and say, here, this is a great movie. You should take a look at this. And vice versa. They would say, oh, we love this movie. It's a studio movie.
Out of our budget.
Do it. Call Stephanie.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, when you're doing story editing and you have people doing coverage, did you have people on staff or would you call out to freelancers?
At the studio, and this is the same at all the major studios, they have union story analysts. So there are union readers who are very well paid, who are very knowledgeable, and that is their entire job, you know, with benefits and everything, where they read 8 scripts a week and evaluate them.
Okay.
So production companies, like, for example, when I worked at Jerry Bruckheimer, because they're not at the studio, those production companies are the groups that generally hire freelance readers, and it costs a lot less and works with individuals. Now, a place like Jerry Bruckheimer Films would have the best readers, and they would sometimes pay more than a production company that doesn't have a studio deal or doesn't have the same kind of resources to pay for the highest level and the most experienced readers. But the readers do have a lot of impact, not in the way that some people think. A big mistake or a misconception, I think, that a lot of screenwriters or aspiring screenwriters have is that the reader has so much power to determine whether a script gets purchased or not. And actually, they don't have any power in that way. Where they do have power, and it is important, is how much does the studio executive or the producer, how much priority do they give to reading the script?
Right.
Like if the coverage comes across and it's really glowing, the executive is probably going to be like, well, I'm going to read this really quickly. But if it's mediocre or really strongly negative, they may never get around to reading it, or it may take so much time by the time they actually read it and make their own determination. Or if it really is a total slam, like there's absolutely nothing professional about the script, then the studio executive would probably pass.
Okay.
Just based on a total slam. But really, you're just using that as a guide to help prioritize. If you have 40 scripts that need to be read in 3 days, there's only so much time. So you have to have some mechanism for determining what's going to be at the top of the stack and what's going to be at the bottom, and that's where coverage comes in handy.
Good Lord. And is there like a regular reading period or time where executives get like a stack, take it home, and decisions are made, and then...
Well, you read throughout the week, and then every weekend on Friday, at every studio, there's the weekend read meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the staff of development executives gets together and they decide which scripts they're going to read for the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Even though they've probably already read it, it's just like they're going to really hanker down and do some analyzing.
Sometimes they haven't read it, or a lot of times scripts, new projects come in on a Friday.
Uh-huh, okay.
Purposefully knowing that the executives are going to read them over the weekend and then start bidding first thing on Monday.
Right.
So everybody figures out what they're going to read, and for studio executives, it's anywhere, you know, an average of 10 to maybe 16 scripts on a weekend.
Okay.
That you're going to read.
Mm-hmm.
And so then on Monday morning is the Monday morning staff meeting where everybody gets together and talks about pitches, things that they're interested either in purchasing and to get the other executives on board or their bosses on board, or other projects that they're currently developing that they need to say, okay, well, here's the notes or here's the changes that we're going to make on this project to move this project forward.
And so you're working 7 days a week, essentially.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. My goodness. And, I mean, really, they're taking, like, they're doing these decisions in a day.
Sometimes, if it is a really high-profile thing, and I love this, then, I mean, there were times where it would be like, okay, this book is coming in, and the messenger's going to deliver it at, you know, 10 o'clock, and... Stephanie, you go into your office and read it as fast as you possibly can, and then you come in and tell me if we should buy it or not, and we're going to have a reader, you know, like it can be, the timing can be extremely competitive, and that's the same thing with whoever we're competing with. They are trying to read it as fast as possible.
Right. That is insane. Stephanie, did you ever take a speed reading course?
Like, I was just about to ask that, Kia. I was going to say, did you train, like, what training did you do?
I should have, in retrospect, taken a speed reading class.
Does Evelyn Wood still exist?
I actually am a very fast reader, and I think part of it is because I grew up in a house without a TV.
Mm.
And so my parents were just kind of hippies and thought TV was a waste of time. And so we didn't have a TV, so we were encouraged to read, both my brother and I. And so I've always been a big reader. And so that is just something that comes more naturally.
Okay.
It was a huge benefit and a part of why I was a good fit in some ways, certainly, for being a studio executive, because such a huge component is just reading and processing and evaluating just huge amounts of material.
Right now, all over the country, mothers are turning off the television set as we speak. As we speak.
I don't know that it worked out that way because my parents were then horrified, of course, that I went into working in Hollywood. So
of course.
They inspired it that way.
And did they? And just a quick question, Stephanie, before we take a break. When you went to go and work in Hollywood, did they look at your job as sort of like, oh, this is a fad and then she'll get serious? Or were they like, wow, we are just like over the moon?
I don't know that it was either of those. It was more like we're really scared about Los Angeles and this whole movie-making world because no one in my family, I mean, does anything remotely involved in entertainment or has ever lived in Los Angeles. So it was more fear of the unknown in that way. But I was really pleased to be able to call them with my first job and say, I have health insurance.
Yeah.
And so that kind of assuaged them a little bit.
Which is a rare thing.
Nothing. I'm making nothing, but I do have health insurance. And they're like, well, okay.
Well, there you go.
Huge.
And let me ask you one more quick question. To be a reader for a studio, you have to be in the union?
Correct.
Okay.
You have to be in the union. And it's basically, I can't say impossible, but very, very challenging to get mm-hmm. in the union simply because it is a union and they have more union readers than they have work for
mm-hmm.
because the studios are shrinking so much.
Mm-hmm.
So that as a career field is really hard to get in.
Yeah.
Now, being a freelance reader, that is much more available and I think is great training ground. And I know many screenwriters who that is a way that they make money.
Mm-hmm.
Or make part of their living, and it's a great opportunity to see what are the projects that are going out, like what your competition is,
oh, totally.
What's selling, what's not. I mean, I think that's a wonderful way to learn and also to get to know the development executives and the people who are hiring you. That's another way for beginners to break in to what's often very hard, the sort of feel around producers and development executives.
Okay. Well, there you go, future screenwriters out there. One good way to keep on top of story and make some connections. So, well, we'll be right back with Stephanie Palmer.
Hey, like what you're listening to? You should check out our blog at www.yougetitgotitgood.com. Or you can always shoot us an email at podcast@yougetitgotitgood.com.
Okay, folks, we've run out of time.
That's how you know it's a great discussion.
Exactly, Kia.
Yes. Running out of time is a sign of a great discussion. Now, for those that we don't run out of time with, don't think that your discussion isn't great also, but this is definitely a great discussion, so we've run out of time.
Better too much content than not enough.
Yeah, and we don't want to rush it, and we want to make sure that you can still get up and, you know, take care of dinner or work on your play or whatever it is you're doing in life.
Exactly. And we want you guys to hang around and listen and not doze on us. So Stephanie's downloaded a lot of great information. Join us next week when we download you on her top 10 tips. They're going to be good.
Come on back.
Come on back. And as always, please visit us. We are on Twitter. Follow us. We post like out the wazoo. It's at you, the letter U, get it, got it good. Be sure to follow us on Facebook. We are at Your New Hollywood. You get it, got it good. And if you have any questions, comments, show suggestions, please email us. We're at podcast@yougetitgotitgood.com. Okay, once again, thank you so much to Stephanie Palmer, and we'll see you next week.